Just going to read some of the opening verses here together. Fifth book of Moses, of course. Thou shalt not see thy brother's ox or his sheep go astray, and hide thyself from them. Thou shalt in any case bring them again unto thy brother. And if thy brother be not nigh unto thee, or if thou know him not, then thou shalt bring it unto thine own house, and it shall be with thee until thy brother seek after it, and thou shalt restore it to him again. In like manner shalt thou do with his ass, and so shalt thou do with his raiment, and with all lost thing of thy brother's, which he hath lost, and thou hast found, shalt thou do likewise. Thou mayest not hide thyself. Thou shalt not see thy brother's ass or his ox fall down by the way, and hide thyself from them. Thou shalt surely help him to lift them up again. A woman shall not wear that which pertaineth unto a man, neither shall a man put on a woman's garment, for all that do so are abomination unto the Lord thy God. If a bird's nest chance to be before thee in the way in any tree, or in the ground, whether they be young ones or eggs, and the dam sitting upon the young or upon the eggs, thou shalt not take the dame with the young. But thou shalt in any wise let the dame go and take the young to thee, that it may be well with thee, and that thou mayest prolong thy days. When thou buildest a new house, then thou shalt make a battlement for thy roof, that thou bring not blood upon thine house, if any man fall from thence. Thou shalt not sow thy vineyard with divers seeds, lest the fruit of thy seed which thou hast sown, and the fruit of thy vineyard be defiled. Thou shalt not plough with an ox and an ass together. Thou shalt not wear a garment of divers sorts, as of woolen and linen together. Amen. Just ending there. The words of verse 11, we know the Lord will add his divine blessing upon it. There are many today who will dismiss the Old Testament, and they will say that it's irrelevant because we have got the New Testament. They seem to think that the Old Testament doesn't bear any relevance or application to us. But of course we know that there are no contradictions between them, and the one complements the other. And that is seen when we consider how in accordance to the mind of God that the ceremonial law is that which teaches spiritual lessons. We ought to remember a couple of points that Paul brings out in his epistles. Romans chapter 15 verse 4 says, for example, "For whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning, that we through patience and comfort of the scriptures might have hope." And in that verse you can include the ceremonial law, you can include the historical accounts, the prophecies, the poetical books, and all the rest. They were all written for our admonition, for our learning, as he reflects back into the Old Testament. And of course that is confirmed by 1 Corinthians 9. And the verse 9 and 10, where it says there, "It is written in the law of Moses, thou shalt not muzzle the mouth of the ox that treadeth out the corn. Doth God take care for oxen? Or saith he it altogether for our sakes?" For our sakes, no doubt, this is written, "that he that ploweth should plough in hope, and that he that thresheth in hope should be partaker of this hope." The ceremonial law has a spiritual application. And just as the oxen are cared for by God, so the lessons are applied to others. In the Old Testament, the law of God was divided into three parts. Probably the most popular, or that's maybe not the right word, the most better known, I maybe would say, was the moral law, or is the moral law. That's the Ten Commandments. And that deals with our relationship with God. And those Ten Commandments still apply today to the believer. We're not saved through the law, but they do give us the roadmap, if you like, the standard of God. There are those who are called Antiminians today, and they dismiss the Ten Commandments. No law. But we don't believe that. We believe the scriptures teach that the law is there. Christ has fulfilled the law on our behalf. But we're still not to commit adultery. We're still not to murder, etc. We're still to honor the Lord's day. So it still applies. And then you have not only the moral law, but then there's the ceremonial law. And that speaks of the types. And it bears relation to the shadows that bear relation to the gospel. And then a third one was this civil law. And that was social in its character. It bears relationship to sound government and to relationships with one another. And the start of this chapter, we're given to see something of that as we consider the opening verses, because here we're dealing in, looking into the civil law, and there's a spiritual application for God's people. I want you to consider the care. The theme that is constantly expressed throughout this chapter is that of preservation. If I can give you just a little summary of it, there should be, you'll see from verse 5, preservation of distinctive behavior. The woman shall not wear that which pertaineth unto a man, neither shall a man put on a woman's garment. For all that do so are abomination unto the Lord thy God. Still in the scriptures. There's a distinctive behavior there, a distinction between a man and a woman. Now, that's gone today, or pretty much. It doesn't seem to be apply to many people, but there ought to be a distinction. And that distinction can be seen in the New Testament as well. It's not just found in Deuteronomy. And so, if I go up the street, somebody should be able to tell from my front or my back that I'm a man. And the same applies to the other as well. Verse 13, there should be a preservation of a woman's honor, a woman's name. And that which follows in the words of verse 13, of a man take a wife and go into in unto her and hate her, and so on. Verse 8, there should be a preservation of life. When thou buildest a new house, then thou shalt make a battlement for thy roof, that thou bring not blood upon thy house if any man fall from thence. Now that doesn't make much sense with you and me, because our roofs over here are all like this here, and you don't need a battlement. But remember, in those days it was the flatness of the roof. And so the battlement, the raised wall, if you like, had to go around the outside, lest there would be somebody fall off the roof. And blood will be on the hands of the owner. That's what that's dealing with. So it's preserving life. And then verse 9 through to 11 that we read as well, you could say there's the preservation of separation. So that's brought out in those words, and where there's a difference in seeds, where there's a difference in that which ploughs together, there wasn't to be an ox and an ass, and the difference in the sorts of garments. Separation. Separation is taught in the Old Testament as well as in the New Testament. So there's a wee word you could write at the top of chapter 22. Preservation in many aspects. And that which stirs us in the face of the opening words is the preserving of life. And the care in the domestic setting. The import of these words is that there was to be a duty of care exercised toward thy brother. We hear a lot about that phrase today. You have a duty of care. Every one of us have a duty of care, whether it's in the workplace or wherever. And here it's brought out towards thy brother. And the word brother, of course, in question meant anyone in the family of Israel. Just didn't mean your blood brother. And anyone in the family of the nation of God's people. The case is presented here where his ox or his sheep was to go astray. But the instruction from God that God gave through Moses to the people was that his people ought to help one another. There was not to be a turning a blind eye to the animal that went astray. There was to be a help given, not a hindrance in the everyday life of that brother. And is there not spiritual application, men and women, in that God expects his people not to be stumbling blocks to one another, but rather that we should be identified of those as those who have a care for others. Those who are active in helping to forward the work of the Lord. The same counsel is given in 1 John chapter 2, in verse 10. It says there, he that loveth his brother abideth in the light, and there is none occasion of stumbling in him, to be a hindrance or to be a stumbling block is pharisaical, because that's how the Lord described them in his day. Matthew 23 and the words of verse 13. But woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye shut up the kingdom of heaven against men, for ye neither go in yourselves, neither suffer ye them that are entering to go in. They were a stumbling block. They put the barriers up to prevent other men getting into God's kingdom, and they wouldn't go in themselves. And that's Phariseeism. In our verse in Deuteronomy 22, there was a care to be exercised even for the neighbor's animal. And that care extended to looking after it. The one who received the animal was to bring it back again to its owner. And if that could not be done immediately, verse 2 would suggest to us, then all that time there was to be a looking after it. It was to be cared for until it was safely returned to its rightful owner. And the teaching of the Scriptures over and over again is that God's people are to use whatever resources that they have under God to care for His people. Notice that what applied to the ox or to the sheep was the same principle that was applied to other things as well. You run your eye over verse 3. You'll notice there, the ass is mentioned. The ass wasn't as important as the ox or the sheep. And then there's the articles of clothing, the raiment, and personal possessions. They aren't as important as the ass in verse 3. And yet the instruction was the same, whatever the value of the item. There's a word concerning the garment, and surely one of our greatest cares is the need for souls to have a covering. And I'm not speaking in the physical or in the social context. I'm speaking rather in the spiritual. There's a need, of course, in the physical as well. A man needs a coat, we'll give him a coat. But I'm speaking primarily in the spiritual. If men and women are to be acceptable in God's sight, then the covering of the fig leaves of their own making will not suffice. And that surely is illustrated to us, is shown to us in the Garden of Eden. There needs to be that covering which is the best robe, which God has provided in salvation. And that covering is the spotless garment of Christ's righteousness. That's why we've come to pray for souls. That's why we seek to proclaim abroad the message of Jesus' blood and righteousness that we've been singing about. For countless souls are naked before God. Naked in their sin. They still have their filthy rags of sin and self-righteousness. And they need the covering of the atoning blood of the soul. Isaiah 61 is a verse that really sums it up. Verse 10. Isaiah 61 and 10 says, I will greatly rejoice in the Lord. My soul shall be joyful in my God, for he hath clothed me with the garments of salvation. He hath covered me with the robe of righteousness, as a bridegroom decketh himself with ornaments, and as a bride adorneth herself with her jewels. God is able to do that in salvation, and we are testimonies to that tonight. I wonder, have we a care? Care to pray, I care to reach them. I go on to show you not only the care here, but the concern. There's a grave concern that is implied in the words of verse 1, indeed throughout these verses, and it is that we never close our eyes to that which is lost. You notice the words see in verse 1, and not hide thyself from them. Words which are repeated verse 3, verse 4. The concern for God's people that is taught throughout this civil law is that everyone would go after the lost and bring them back again. Thou shalt not see thy brother's ox or his ass go astray and hide thyself from them. Thou shalt in any case bring them again unto thy brother. That was the case with the ox, with the sheep, that's in view. And the principle that is seen in the civil law concerning the lost animals of a brother is even greater when it comes to those who are lost in their sin and in nature's darkness. Hymn writer pens it like this: we cannot leave them lost and lone. We want them over there. sung it, haven't we? And the one who saw an animal lost was actively to go and seek it so that it might be returned again. There was honesty required. Used to be years ago a little rhyme in the school, finders keepers. You ever hear that? Ever say it? It's not really scripturally correct in terms of this verse before us. If lost and found again, it was to be returned to its rightful owner. But the overriding thought is that that which was lost might be found. And men and women, that's the same teaching of the Savior in Luke chapter 15. Exactly the same. The farmer doesn't close his eyes to the lost sheep. The woman doesn't close her eyes to the lost coin. The father doesn't close his eyes to the lost son. But they go in search of it until they find it. I wonder, is that our concern? And in seeing souls that are lost, we actively go in search of them that they might be found of Christ. Christ who came to seek and to save that which was lost. And you know, dear people, I'm not, as it were, sending you out the door, through the church, onto the streets. It starts here. It begins in the place of prayer. There before we go out and speak that word. It begins in the prayer of seeking the Lord to lay in our hearts those that are lost and to bring them even to the throne of grace in prayer. And if God lays one in our heart, then we have the confidence that we're praying in accordance to His will, and we know that He hears us. A man or woman who has no concern about those which are lost will never bring them before God in prayer. They will not actively seek them that they might be found and brought to being at peace and reconciled to their Creator God again. I have no concern in the prayer meeting for them. You'll not reach them. You'll not have a concern to do it. I trust and pray that God would deepen that concern for others in every one of our hearts in these days, so there might be joy on earth among the saints and joy in heaven over sinners that have repented. There's a third little thought here. That's the charge. The help that God's people are to offer and share is given in different ways. You look at the words of verse 4. I shall not see thy brother's ass or his ox fall down by the way and hide thyself from him. Thou shalt surely help him to lift them up again. The words are spiritually those that can be applied to those who belong to the Lord. And yet they're found to be fallen by the wayside. They've fallen through some circumstance. That's the circumstance described in this verse with regard to the brother's ass or his ox. And should that be the case, then God doesn't expect His people to pass by on the other side. That was what the Levite and the priest did with the man who was fallen by the wayside, who was helped eventually by the Samaritan. But rather, the instruction from the civil law was that his people were to help, and to help in a manner which was zealous. For the words of verse 4 state, "Thou shalt surely help him." There's no doubt about it. And it would be with the aim in mind of lifting him up again. Good job Ray was there on Sunday night. He lifted me up again. This is the same charge as given to God's people by the Apostle Paul, you know. And I want you really, in closing here, to come with me into this. Galatians chapter 5. Galatians chapter 5, he exhorts believers to serve one another. Look at verse 13. He says, "For brethren," speaking to God's people, "ye have been called unto liberty, only use not liberty for an occasion to the flesh, but by love serve one another." You have a freedom now that we never had in our sin. Freedom because the Lord has set us free. And he's saying, don't use it as a license to follow the flesh, to satisfy the old desires, but for love, serving one another. And also to caution them against having such a spirit that would prevent such a service. Look at verse 26. He says, let us not be desirous of vainglory, provoking one another, envying one another. And now as if to promote the one and to prevent the other, he gives further direction in chapter 6. Brethren, he says, if a man be overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. Bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if a man think himself to be something when he is nothing, he deceiveth himself. If any brother is discouraged, if any brother is overtaken in a fault, then a work of helping, a work of restoring should be in evidence. The spiritual response will be to restore, not to condemn. It will aim at lifting them up again, not knocking them down. Yet how often it is so different. How often there's a putting down. How often there's a sticking and a boot in. And there needs to be a lifting up. Verse 1, restore such an one. You know the illusion there behind that, or the analogy behind it? It's of the setting of bones that are broken. Rather, if a man be overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of meekness. Setting bones that are broken are out of joint. And if that happens physically in us, we want to go to the hospital and we hope to do a good job. Now, Craigavon didn't get a good publicity years ago. They weren't great at putting bones back together. Maybe they're better now in some of these other hospitals. But you want the thing to be done right. You want your bones, broken bones, to be set right and to be done with great care and tenderness. And that's the thought, that's the picture behind Galatians 6 and verse 1. Professors fallen into sin are like broken and dislocated bones. They're out of their place. They lose both their comfort and their usefulness. And they are to be restored by gently telling them of their faults, by mildly even reproving them for them. And when sensitive them and troubled for them, by speaking comfortably to them, bringing them again and restoring them to their former usefulness. That's the idea. Notice how such help is to be offered. It's in the spirit of meekness. And with the thought of putting yourself in the place of the one who has fallen. Considering thyself, verse 1 says. Considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. Maybe that similar problems will come to the one who offers help. And then they will be glad of loving kindness and mercy shown and care extended. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 11 and 12. And all these things happen unto them for ensamples, and they are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come. Wherefore, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed, lest he fall. That brother that has fallen some way, that could be you or I. We're capable, every one, of falling. How many times have we fallen before, and the Lord has lifted us up? The directive is given in verse 2. We are to bear one another's burdens. And doesn't that remind us that no believer lives unto himself, but we are part of a family? We have a charge. We have a constraint from God to show the right spirit toward others. 1 Corinthians 12 and 26. Whether one member suffer, all the members suffer with it. Or one member be honored, all the members rejoice with it. We don't live unto ourselves, dear people. Child of God, you're part of a greater family, God's family. And if one hurts, we hurt with them. If one weeps, we weep with them. If one has been blessed of the Lord and honored, we don't grow jealous We support them and bless God for them. That's the sense. The conclusion in considering this charge is that those who fail to obey the Lord in this directive will answer to the Lord one day for their failure. It may be that in days to come God will shut his eyes to the need of the disobedient and the unfaithful when they are in trouble. Let me just finish with a couple of verses. Psalm 41 verse 1. Blessed is he that considereth the poor. The Lord will deliver him in time of trouble. Not good. Blessed is the Lord. Blessed is the one. Happy is the one that considereth the poor. The Lord will deliver him in time of trouble. Then I want to leave with you Proverbs 21 and verse 13. Whoso stoppeth his ears at the cry of the poor, he also shall cry himself, but shall not be heard. We have to give an account of how we deal with each other, that we don't turn away, we don't hide ourselves, as in the words of Deuteronomy, but that should surely we should help them to lift them up again. May God help us to have that right spirit among ourselves. And having that right spirit among ourselves, then therefore will not be a hindrance to those we're seeking, who are lost and need to be found and need to be reached. I trust the Lord will bless even those few thoughts to our hearts tonight for his own name's sake.